And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, this turned out to be a week of decisions. We had the Willis, Frannie Willis fate in her trial was decided. Pence made a decision. Your buddy Jeffrey Ayers made a decision. David McCormick made a decision. And Trump made a decision.
Yeah.
So we've got lots of decisions here. And 100 Republican congressmen made decisions that didn't bode too well for the Republican majority leader in the House. Let's dig into some of these decisions. Where do you want to start?
Let's start local with Dave McCormick and Jeffrey Ayers.
All right.
Dave McCormick, of course, running for U.S. Senator against Bob Casey. He's made a couple of, or at least one gaffe on the campaign when he came out and said he's spending his time with millionaires, you know, collecting money. But this week came out against the infrastructure and the Build Back Better bills. Although he claims that he's for infrastructure, he's joining that list of Republicans who would vote against these bills, these improvements, and then try to claim credit for them. He wants to have it both ways, and I don't think Bob Casey and the Democrats are going to allow him to do that.
Why do you think he's not a jerk? Why does he do something that's so jerky?
You know, but he's not a politician by nature. And he's you know, used to being able to get his way on things and saying what it is. His wealth kind of insulates him from the consequences of what he does and what he says.
But it's not like the infrastructure bill increases food stamps. The infrastructure bill provides millions and billions of dollars to investors to invest. That's what he does. What's he got against this?
Well, what he sees against it is they have to raise taxes in order to pay for it, right?
Paying for it. Okay. Fair enough.
The short term, you know, the people who are interested in quarterly profits instead of long range profits.
Well, that's definitely his background. Right, yeah. He made his career on quarterly profits.
Right.
If for him to have a long-range outlook, it has to go to 4 months, not three.
That's it.
The infrastructure bill goes out 10 years.
Yes. Yeah. And so we have him, and then we have Jeffrey Ayers, who is one of the, I saw something, one of the 20 richest people in the United States.
The richest person in Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, which is no... You know, small feet when you have like the Mellon family.
That's right.
Out there, of course, right. I guess theirs is dispersed among several people, sort of like the Walton family and whatever.
Right. Yeah.
But his big thing was charter schools and funneling public money into private education, in essence.
Mm-hmm. And abolishing the Department of Education, as his buddy Betsy DeVos tried to do.
Right. And that's, again, one of these quarterly, you know, it's not a long-range thing. It's we can get money. We'll be able to then siphon off the money from public education into our pockets rather than to actually have it go into education.
And he's not wrong. These private educational companies make a fortune.
Right. And they don't have a lot of responsibilities. They don't have a lot of accounting where they're actually audited. And when the Democrats, on the occasions when they seem to be willing to go along with stuff, that's what they want in the bills. And then they become no-no bills. You can't do that. Give us the money, but don't give us the audits is where they're at.
And where the educational audits come in, these private schools are worse than the public schools. Not only are they not better, they're actually worse.
Yes.
That is, if you trust the tests.
Right. Oh, and this gets back to McCormick, of course, because his fund was one of those that the teachers had monies in, if I'm not mistaken, and did not perform very well.
That's right. In Pennsylvania, it caused a crisis.
Yes. Now, getting back to Yaz, what he's been doing is now expanding his reach. He gave, what was it, $5 or $6 million to Greg Abbott in Texas.
Right.
And now it comes out that he's been dialoguing with Donald J. Trump. And all of a sudden, his name has popped up on a short list of potential Secretary of the Treasury in the next Trump administration.
So given the fact that Trump doesn't really care about policy, you'll be handing fiscal policy over to one of the leading libertarians in the country.
Right. Right. And don't forget, libertarians are against taxation.
That's exactly right.
That's what they
live
in.
So the man who's responsible for making sure the government is funded believes the government shouldn't exist.
Yes.
And therefore, it doesn't need funding.
Yes. Of course, you know, talking about Secretaries of the Treasury, just as an aside, Steve Mnuchin appeared this week saying he's trying to put $100 billion together to buy, or $100 million.
A lot.
To buy TikTok from the Chinese, or the ByteDance part of that.
Right.
You know, that was a decision that Congress made, or is made in the process of trying to make this week. The House voted to tell TikTok that if you want to exist here in the United States, the Chinese have to give up their ownership and their algorithms. So we'll see where that goes.
Trump's against that.
Well, he was for it before he was against it.
Right, but now he's against it.
Now he's against it because he spoke to some people who promised, I think, to fund his campaign, or he's hoping that they'll fund his campaign, and they have money in TikTok. Isn't that Jeffrey Yaz?
Jeffrey Yaz has a lot of money in TikTok.
Yeah.
Well, I don't quite understand, and I don't really want to get into, but I just want to say I don't understand why they want to get the Chinese to divest themselves of TikTok, which has, I don't know how many billion participants in the world, and practically every teenager in America. What are they picking a fight with those people for? That I don't get. The line that they could use that to influence the elections or steal secrets about America is specious. Just specious. That they don't need TikTok for that.
Well, I'm not sure it's secrets. It's the collection of data and the analytics or that you do on that data. That's
so then
important.
We collect the data on all the teenagers in America. Then what? So what?
Well, you it's not just teenagers, but most, you know, you're right, it's mostly young people. But the teenagers are the future. Remember, and the Chinese are always looking
long-term. I understand
that,
but so what?
Well,
what so what? I mean, to me, it's just part of whipping up public opinion to justify increased military expenditures aimed at China, which I don't see benefits the American people at all.
Well, but then you get creating TikTok messages and TikTok videos aiming at the young people that have a built-in pro-Chinese bias to them.
Has anybody seen that? Is that what is on TikTok?
Well,
these 20-second movies. I don't believe it.
Well, you're not sure, but it's also what they emphasize and what they de-emphasize or don't emphasize. It you know this is a conversation maybe we should have almost a whole show on that. But we got a lot of other decisions that popped up this week that were
I'm willing to move on. Let's go to Pence.
Okay. You know, Michael Pence comes out on Friday and says, you know, I'm not going to endorse Donald Trump this year. but his reasoning is different. It's not that, gee, he almost got me murdered on January 6th, or gee, he asked me to do violate my oath to the Constitution. That's not what really bothers him. What really bothers him is that Pence says he's not far right enough, not conservative enough in his approach. You know, whether that's going to get anybody but Michael Pence and his immediate family, who knows? And he doesn't say he's not going to vote for him. He says he's not going to endorse him. He says he's not going to vote for Joe Biden. So the best you can hope for is he sits the race out. Question is, how many more Republicans are kind of like him? We've known the Never Trumpers. We've seen them. And
well, along those lines, then there's an important Never Trumper group that considers themselves centrist Democrat, centrist Republicans. They get things done. So they're going to endorse a candidate in the Republican primary in Virginia in one of the contests against Bob Good. Bob Good is the incoming chairman of the Freedom Caucus. They're going to oppose him because he is an obstructionist. He doesn't get things done. Who are they going to support? A Christian nationalist who was present at the demonstration on January 6th, who is an election denier. Now, if that doesn't represent the complete capitulation of these so-called centrist Republicans to the Trump machine, I don't know what does.
Well, I'll tell you what does. The takeover of the RNC, the Republican National Committee.
All right.
This week, what's her name? Romney McDaniel, who kissed Trump's whatever shoes for the last several years, is out. A more MAGA person from North Carolina is in, but he's only really the figurehead. The power right now is his vice chair, who is Donald Trump's daughter-in-law, Laura Trump. And immediately they conducted a purge of staffers, a large part of whom were supposed to be working on bringing people into the party, more diverse people. And what this enterprise is now going to be is it's going to really use the machinery of the RNC to raise money to funnel into the Trump legal expenses and the Trump campaign. And it's going to leave a lot of Republican candidates in the states and down ballot high and dry.
Listen, grift is grift. That's the way it is. That's what they do.
Yes.
Right?
That's also the authoritarians. That's what they're for. And it's, you know, but it's, this is something that's been coming. And as you say, it's a complete capitulation now of the Republican Party. It's no longer the grand old party. It's the MAGA party.
And, yeah, it's a fascist group. It's a fascist group that worships and serves the Trump machine. That's why there are no successors. And there's no reason to have successors.
Right. We're there forever.
Yeah.
Which is the message that Donald Trump was getting this week from Viktor Orban.
That's how you do it.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Who's the poster child, I will call him the child, the poster dictator for the what used to be the conservative movement. Remember, the CPAC had a convention there in Hungary?
Yeah.
And
last year. Just last year.
Just last year. So we had that. And, you know, even further, we in the decline of the organized old Republican Party, we saw further this week where they were supposed to have their their retreat. I believe it was a Greenbrier. It's a pretty posh spot. And a lot of the elected officials, House and Senate, never bothered to show.
100 of them.
100 of them said, we're not going. Part of that, I think, was because the last time that they had something like this, Speaker Johnson delivered a church sermon and not a political sermon. They didn't need to hear that again. And they're dispirited in many ways. They're down now. Ken Buck is going to resign this week, which leaves them with, what, a 1 or 2 vote? They're down to 218, I think.
I think they're at 1 vote. If everybody shows up, they got a 1 vote majority.
Right.
So, right. I don't know what, I mean, so what? They don't want to legislate anyway. So what's the difference?
Right. Well, there is an interesting piece of legislation that's been moving, and that was with a petition led by Brian Fitzpatrick from southeastern Pennsylvania to a discharge petition to try to get a vote out on foreign aid bill.
He needs 2/3, right?
There's two different ways. He needs a majority of House members to sign that bill, to sign the petition to bring a bill in. Now, his bill is a little different than the Senate bill, but it's more comprehensive. It would be a bill to fund Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, as opposed to the Senate bill, which does that, plus they have some aid, humanitarian aid for the Palestinians. And Johnson, who's been steadfastly opposed to funding Ukraine, has seen the writing on the wall. It would be a total embarrassment to him if there is a discharge petition, because he would lose that, because if it comes out, there's more than enough votes. It's just a majority vote. What requires a 2/3 vote is a suspension motion. And this is what Johnson tried to do on the standalone vote for Israel. He did not get the 2/3 to support it. And he's going to go back, and he says he's going to have motions for both Israel and for Ukraine. I don't know what he's going to do about Taiwan, and he's certainly not going to do anything about the Palestinians, but that's going to need a 2/3 vote. But he's going to have to, eat some crow, because he's been against Ukraine funding. So it still is.
But you think he's going to lose this vote?
We have to see what happens. If they get a majority on the discharge position, he's going to lose, and that's the most embarrassing thing he could have, because that means he's lost his sway over the House.
Let's assume he loses it now, and that would be now three separate bills we're talking about: one for Ukraine, one on Israel, one on Taiwan.
No, the petition bill was one bill for the three of them.
One for the three. Okay,
so not the Senate bill. And then it would have to go back to the Senate. The Senate would have to sort of decide whether they're going to leave the Palestinians out and just get the aid over to the other three. But the standalone bills, he could claim victory on, but he's going to incur the wrath of the Donald, who doesn't want Ukraine. But there's more than enough support to get Ukraine and Israel approved. Whether it reaches the 2/3, that's going to be interesting. But if he brings it to the floor and it doesn't, then he's just in a very weak position. And it gets back to the best thing it can do is be obstructionist. That's basically.
You think Trump cares about any of this? You think MAGA cares about any of this?
Well, Trump cares because Putin cares.
All right. Yeah.
That's where Trump's at on this.
Trump, meanwhile, showed what he was made of, because after carrying on for years about how he's going to be the great defender of Social Security, he made a speech this weekend saying he was for cutting, that Social Security could be cut, Medicaid could be cut, wouldn't affect anybody, because there's so much waste. All I have to do is cut the waste.
And that's the thing about Medicare and Social Security that the Republicans hate. The fact is they're very efficient.
Yeah, there is no waste.
There is no waste because there's no CEOs draining hundreds of millions of dollars out of the system.
That's right.
You just have public, you just have public servants who are getting paid government wages.
That's right.
Performing.
That's
right. And they can't stand that. Because
plus, which there's nothing to waste. Either you're 65 or you're not 65. Either you're poor or you're not poor. Yeah, I understand that. Here in Susquehanna County, we have a local official who's under indictment for stealing food stamp money for 5 years. That kind of crime exists. She happens to be a Republican. But there's very little of that. You cut all of that out, it doesn't affect Social Security or Medicaid one damn bit.
Right.
There's no money to be saved there. So what he's really saying is he's ready to cut Social Security and Medicaid.
And don't forget, this has been what the Republican Party since Eisenhower. Eisenhower didn't try this, but since Eisenhower, it's been their dream. They had the Simpson-Bowles Commission that said you got to cut benefits or cut scale back. And more recently, remember W., when he won re-election, he had all this political power built up, the first thing he went after was Social Security. He went on that tour of the United States to promote the privatization, basically. And he had to cut the tour short because no one was going for it. He was running into so much opposition. And then you had Senator Rick Scott coming out, blatantly that we have to cut these programs. So this falls in line with all of that.
Meanwhile, on the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders has tried to step up, and he introduced a resolution this week mandating that the standard work week should no longer be 40 hours, should be 32 hours.
4 days, basically.
4 days, 4 8-hour days. And Bernie Sanders, you know, makes the point that if the Democrats don't figure out a concrete way to talk to working people, they're going to lose. Doesn't matter what you talk about the horrors of the Republicans. If the Democrats don't clearly stand for something that benefits working people, they're going to lose. End of story. And so he's introduced this idea of the 32-hour week. That's very interesting because the 40-hour week, that was a staple of the New Deal that came into existence, what, in 1939, 1940? That's been the standard since about 1940, for no particular reason that I can think of, except that there was a 50-year struggle against the 10-hour day for the 8-hour day. So the 8-hour day got enshrined finally. They started fighting for it in the 1880s. Finally, in 1940, the 8-hour day became standard. Bernie now says, now we have to fight for the 32-hour day. I remember 1960s that leftists raised the slogan 30 for 40. In other words, work 30 hours for 40 hours pay as a way to guarantee employment and spread out employment.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting concept.
Well, the French have that.
Yeah, they do. They have a 35-hour week, right?
Right. Something like that. I'm not sure exactly, but they do have a lesser week. And so the thought is there's two things about that. One is you would have to employ more people to pick up the slack for the extra 8 hours that you're not getting from the one employee. And the second thing is overtime kicks in a lot sooner.
Or you hire more people.
Yeah.
That's right.
But we've run into a problem now that we don't have enough people because we don't have immigrants coming into the country. So
that's right. So, but without the immigrants, we don't have Social Security.
Right.
Because it's the working population that pays for the retired population. That's how Social Security works.
If the
Democrats work it right, they've got a very powerful message here with this 32-hour week.
Yeah. Well, and talk about not having enough people work to fill in. The statistics came out this week, and Lackawanna and Luzerne County, Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, Hazleton area, has the lowest unemployment rate basically in history. They're down to 4%. Traditionally, since the mines closed up here, unemployment has always been much higher than the national average and higher even than the state average. And this is about as low. I think the last time it got anywhere near this low was during the 60s when we were, you know, the guns and butter with mm-hmm. the Vietnam War and mm-hmm. the big and the Great Society.
Hmm.
So we had those things.
Well, how does that benefiting Cartwright? It should be benefiting Cartwright, shouldn't it?
He's out here every week. I saw him this week. He's going to places. He's bringing grants for all sorts of projects. New firehouse down in Moosic, small businesses, grants too. All these things. one of the, you know, he brought in Gene Raimondo, who's the Secretary of Commerce, to talk to business people. And one of the people that talked to her, you know, to find out about what the government can do, was this guy Rob Bresnahan from down in Luzerne County. And now Rob has decided, having heard what the government can do, he wants to replace Matt Cartwright. He's going to be running against him. His problem, he's not quite totally self-funding, but he's got a lot of money. His problem is that he won't have any influence in the Congress. Cartwright's on the Appropriations Committee, and that's how he brings in the money. People, pretty much understand that. They understand that. So,
of course, my congressman, Dan Muser, he's against the infrastructure bill. He voted against the infrastructure bill. I think he was, at this cycle, he's Trump's first endorser in Pennsylvania. He's a very reactionary guy. And you'll be shocked to learn that his district has a few projects, but almost the least number of projects in the infrastructure bill. Our county gets nothing. So how's that for representation?
We don't want nothing. We don't need nothing. We're standing pat. Meanwhile,
guess what's happening with our population? They're leaving.
They're leaving.
Our population in our county dropped 11% between the censuses of 2010 and 2020. That was the highest population loss of any county in the state. And since then, the loss is even greater. And if you look at the population of females of childbearing age, that is between 15 and 40, mm-hmm. that segment of our county's population has dropped 16.5% since the last census until today. 16.5%. That's like the exodus from Egypt.
Well, Passover's coming, but
yeah,
not too soon. This week, this week we have both St. Patrick's Day, which is today, Sunday, and next weekend we have the holiday of Purim. Mordecai and Esther and all those things.
You're supposed to get drunk, right? You get drunk on Purim.
Well, you got two holidays where people are supposed to get drunk, right?
All right, so we have something to look forward to.
Yes.
If we can look forward.
Yes. Skol.
Skol. See you next week. L'chaim, right. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.